Hello, my name is Megan Spencer and I'm a broadcaster and a podcaster. Firstly, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which today's recordings are taking place, those of the Kaurna people in Adelaide and of the Adelaide Plains, and also the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation around Melbourne. And I'd like to offer my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Today, we're commemorating the 75th anniversary of VP Day, Victory in the Pacific Day, the end of the Second World War for Australia, which was announced on the 15th of August in 1945 by then Prime Minister Ben Chifley. After 6 years of brutal global conflict, it was an auspicious day for the world, for Australians and, of course, Victorians, civilians and service people alike. So today we're interested in exploring VP Day from the Victorian experience. So it's my privilege now to introduce you to a Navy veteran who served as a sub-lieutenant, Mr. James Paisis, or Jim, as he's known, 95 years young. Hi, how are you, Jim?
Hi.
Now, thank you very much for speaking to me today. And before we move into our conversation, if it's okay with you, I'd just like to introduce you in a little bit more detail. Is that all right with you? Okay, thank you. So the eldest of four children, Jim was born in West Melbourne to Greek parents on the 19th of September 1924. They lived in Carlton and his dad set up a fruit stall in the heart of Melbourne City after he arrived in Australia in 1902, firstly to Perth, then he moved to Melbourne. Now, thinking he'd look rather smart with officer's gold buttons and a strap on his arm, Jim's parents gave their reluctant permission for him to go into the Navy, which he did on the 23rd of September 1943, just after turning 18. He initially trained at Flinders Naval Depot and then went on to Wartime Officers Training School. Jim mostly served on corvettes, initially as a midshipman on HMAS Glenelg, then as a gunnery officer on the Colac, becoming a confirmed sub-lieutenant by the age of 20. On the 26th of May 1945, supporting the army in the Solomon Islands, the Colac was shelled by a Japanese shore battery, killing two of Jim's shipmates, injuring two others, and tearing a big hole in the engine room. Taking on water, the Colac was lucky to make it out of the channel, eventually towed back to Sydney for repair. Jim was on the Colac in dry dock in Sydney on VP Day in 1945. He discharged on the 4th of June, 46, and of his time in the Navy, Jim says, while it had its dangers, it was a good life. He felt privileged and fortunate to be an officer, and he likes to say, the beauty of the Navy is that you're always going somewhere. That's true, isn't it?
That's right, Megan.
Yes. So, Jim, I just want to show you something. This is the newspaper. Can you see that?
I see that, yeah.
That's the newspaper from 75 years ago announcing.
On the day.
Yes, yes, it is. I just thought I would show you that to start off the interview. And I'm just wondering, just as a general question to you, Jim, how does it make you feel to reflect on VP Day all these years later?
Well, I suppose I'm happy to be here because on that day we had that shelling in Swazelle in the Solomons. It was touch and go whether we would have lost the ship in that harbour. So I'm very thankful to be here.
Well, I mean that's maybe what is worth reflecting on, the perils of war and the uncertainty. You know, you never know what's coming around the corner when you're engaged in combat.
No.
And that would have been on your mind a lot, I would imagine, as you were patrolling and convoying.
All the time, because the Japanese had an active submarine fleet all down the east coast, and that was our job, escorting convoys and looking out for submarines.
Yeah.
So you didn't know when you were going to pop up and cop a torpedo from somewhere.
Did they, as part of your training, did they talk to you about, I suppose, keeping your mind focused on the job and trying not to let that kind of anxiety come into it?
No, they never did that. That psychology stuff, no, that didn't exist then. That's what all you young people are doing nowadays. We just got on with it.
You just got on with it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, let's go into some of the questions I've got here for you today, Jim. You were the eldest of four children to Greek parents, yep. And you've described yourself as a Greek kid from Carlton when you were going into the into the Navy. So what are your recollections of Victoria at the time you enlisted?
Well, it was a much quieter place than it is now. There wasn't very much traffic around. There was no big buildings around. I can remember the building on the corner of Swanson and Burke. Manchester Unity was the 12 stories, was the biggest building in Melbourne. Now they're five times bigger than that.
Yeah, but there's not so many beautiful ones like the Manchester building now, are there?
No, they're all very modern. Yeah. Of course, well, they have to be, yeah.
And do you remember the day that you enlisted and what that day was like?
I can remember the very day we all, I just signed up a few weeks before and I was called up a few days after my 18th birthday and the recruiting office was in Collins Street and a whole bunch of us suddenly turned up to be enlisted. And there was Manny Scheinberg, a classmate of mine from high school, was one of the guys that was there on that day. So Manny, as it was, he was also selected for officer training, but he didn't make the grade, apparently.
So what do you think? What do you think the reason is that you made the grade back then?
That's always been a mystery to me, Megan. Really, there I was, a little ignorant kid from Carlton, who couldn't speak any English when I started school. And all of a sudden I'm interviewed and somebody somewhere thought I had what they call OLQ. You know what OLQ is?
No, I don't.
Officer-like qualities.
Oh.
So take me in. I must have had that and I was selected to do this course, which was only 8 weeks because officers these days take many years to train, but during wartime there isn't time to train, so there was a wartime officers training school and they grabbed people like me with OLQ and put us through the course. And then 8 weeks later, there I am striding around with the brass buttons and a stripe on my arm.
You got the brass buttons that you wanted. I believe you asked the petty officer at enlistment, how do you get one of those? Is that right?
Oh, how do you know that?
Yes. I've done my research.
Oh, yeah, there was an advertisement in the paper, and I took it in with me, and I said, "Oh, excuse me, Chief, what have I got to do to become an officer?" And he gave me the dirtiest look, because there he was, a long-serving fellow in the Navy. Who's this little snotty-nosed kid who wants to be an officer?
And wasn't that the nickname of trainees, snotties? Is that what you were called?
A midshipman.
Yeah, yeah.
Was referred to as a snotty, yeah.
Which you became shortly thereafter, didn't
yes,
you?
Yeah, I did.
Before we move on, I just want to ask you, when I rang you the other day to have a chat with you about doing this interview, you said that you wanted to go into the Navy, not just because of the gold buttons and the stripes, but you wanted to stay out of the Army.
Well, I fancied the Navy. I wasn't too keen on the Army or the Air Force, but I would have been called up, conscripted into the Army when I turned 18, so I preferred to volunteer into the Navy.
And have a bit of choice about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a very interesting life on those corvettes and you did some gunnery training as well, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I did. I went back after about a year. I was sent back to Flinders Naval Depot again for another gunnery course, and then I went to the Colac as the gunnery officer.
So at that time, maybe just staying on the 40s in Victoria at the time you enlisted, what was the sense at that time? I mean, we were at war. Was there a sense of foreboding or worry? Was there a sense of excitement and busyness? I'm just curious about what that was like.
Well, I don't think we had any foreboding because we were only young kids, you know, 18-year-olds, and we were all keen to get into it because we wanted to all save the world, you know. And we were all anxious that that the war would still be on when we turned 18, so we could hop in and have a go.
It was a big adventure, wasn't it, in many ways?
Oh, it was an interesting adventure, yeah. And I preferred the Navy. The beauty of the Navy, I've always said, you're always going somewhere. You weren't just stuck in an army camp.
Yeah, so you would have seen many places in your career.
But it was mainly around the Pacific. The corvettes operated all over the world because there were 56 of them. You probably know that, and they operated all over the world. We operated in the Pacific and all around New Guinea, all around the north of Australia, over in the Solomon Islands,
yeah,
the southern part of the Philippines.
A long way from home in Melbourne at that time.
Oh, everybody was, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what you do in wartime. So, Jim, after you left the Navy in 1946, you remained with a number of naval associations. You joined,
oh, yes. Yeah.
And you joined the RSL. And memorial and commemoration and remembrance of the war, I guess, is part of joining those sorts of associations after the war for you. So I'm curious, just after the war, maybe as part of those associations or in any other way, how did you choose to remember the war? How did you commemorate it?
Well, I always attended any functions and reunions. And normally there was what they call the Corvettes Association, because there were so many sailors belonged to corvettes. And normally they were all named after provincial towns in Australia. The towns used to more or less adopt their corvette. And if any reunions were held, they were often held back at the town. For instance, we went to Colac many times.
Wow.
Had reunions, and we were received by the RSL and by the city of Colac.
That must have been quite extraordinary.
Oh, it was. It was exciting and good to see all the fellas once again, you know.
Yeah.
We used to all book into a hotel, to a motel that we knew, and stay there for a few days. And there was a lot of reminiscing that went on when that
I'll
happened.
I'll bet. Because there was something like, was it 80 crew on a Corvette?
There were about 80 in the Corvette, yeah.
Yeah. And
you've been doing your research.
I have. I didn't want to appear silly in front of you.
Oh, no, you can never do that.
But I think that's maybe, yeah, I'm just contemplating that idea of a reunion in the town that the ship is named after. So it really is taking in a much broader community, isn't it, as part of that war effort at the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the towns have got memorabilia. For instance, the ship's bell is hanging in the foyer of the RSL in Colac. There's all other bits and pieces taken off the ships when they were paid off.
Yeah. Jim, did it mean a lot to you, those reunions, seeing those people that you served with, like I assume quite soon after the war and then over the years to come?
Oh, yes, we really looked forward to the reunions because it was quite a family, really. The crew of the ship, because you live so closely together on the ship, and, you know, 80 people on a corvette, they're only 180 feet long, and there are 80 of us crowded into a small space.
And how about Anzac Day for you and Remembrance Day?
Well, I used to always march on Anzac Day with the corvette section, and my dear wife Val used to come into the city with me, and I'd march with the mob, and Val would walk down the street alongside us and meet us at the other end.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that was in the heart of Melbourne?
Oh, yeah, right down Swanston Street to the Shrine of Remembrance.
Yeah.
The march used to be, yeah.
And how did that make you feel when you were marching alongside?
Oh, quite proud, really, because we were all dressed up, collar and tie, and medals clacking away, you know. Yeah,
they were big days back then, weren't they, Anzac
Day? And people were clapping and cheering.
Yeah.
And that's the only time anybody clapped and cheered you on Anzac Day.
Yeah. And when you came back from the war, Jim, I believe you returned to your old job as a clerk with the YMCA or a clerk.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's where you met your wife, Val, in 1946.
Well, Val was a stenographer in the office in there, and we met, and we sort of clicked right from the very first moment, and we were together from then on until she died in 2014.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you met her so quickly too after you got back.
Yeah.
And then you went on to study hospital administration, in which you remained for 30 years and a good many of those at Box Hill Hospital in Melbourne's East, where you settled.
Yeah.
You had three children. And I guess, you know, after the war, you would have seen many changes in Australia, in Victoria, many changes in that time between the 50s and 60s post-war. And I'm wondering what your memories are of some of those changes after the war.
Yeah. Oh, I think the main change that I remember is the big migrations of people from all over the world and the increase in infrastructure in Melbourne and traffic on the roads.
Was it a good place to live then?
Oh, well, it was your home, yeah, in Drummond Street, Carlton. And Carlton was right in the heart of Melbourne. And my family lived in this house for 60-odd years.
Wow.
And then when we moved out, we married and we built a house in Baldwin. And I'm still there in the same house.
Oh, gosh, that's beautiful.
About 68 years, I think, I've been there.
Well, that was one of the new suburbs that sprang up after the war, wasn't it?
It was then. Now it's an inner suburb of Melbourne. Now then it was a long way out.
Yeah.
But now it's not. It's quite close in.
So you moved back with, when you got married, you moved in with your parents in Carlton after you got married. Is that right?
No, we didn't. No. We moved into an apartment in Kew, an upstairs apartment. It was a lady very nicely converted with its own little kitchen, and we were there for 3 years until we got War Service Home Finance and built the house in Baldwin.
So you had a war service loan after your
after
serving.
Right.
Yeah. That would have helped you a lot, I would imagine.
Oh, it was, yeah. I mean, most of us, none of us could have done what we did without it.
I'm just thinking, you know, thinking of your parents. Were they both still with you after you got home from the war?
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was their response to you when you got home?
Well, I've got to tell you, I became a black sheep very quickly because Val wasn't Greek.
Oh, okay.
and that was a big problem for my family. It took a while to turn around and handle this, you know.
And did they learn to love her?
They did. Eventually, it all settled down.
Yep.
Yeah. But in the beginning, not only my family but other friends and relatives, what are you doing to your family? You know, she's not Greek.
Well, isn't it interesting how times have changed and what that time was like then? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very different now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodness me. You once said in an interview that you regretted not staying on a while longer in the Navy and that you left a life that you really did enjoy and that the work on the ships was very, very interesting for you. But you said that there was a bit of anxiety around when the war was over to get back to normality again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. You had mixed feelings, really. You missed the companionship of people. It was totally different being back in a civilian life again.
Did it take a while for you to settle?
Oh, it took a little while, yeah. Well, how can I put it? You were more organised in the service. You knew where you were going and what you were doing. Otherwise, you're on your own when you're outside the service.
Yeah. Jim, you have three children. You now have six grandchildren and 13 grandchildren. Well, you told me that on the phone the other day, which is amazing. So you've seen...
Plus three step-grandchildren.
Oh, goodness me. So it must take...
Great-grandchildren. Yeah.
Takes a lot of effort to keep on top of birthdays and things like that, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. I've got a little list in the kitchen and I have to look at it every now and then to see who belongs to who.
That's wonderful. So I'll go back to holding up this for you. What do you think when you see that? What do you feel? Do you remember seeing the paper?
Oh, yeah, I remember that particular paper. Well, glad it was all over and no more people had to die. Although they are dying in other wars anyway.
And you were on the COLAC in dry dock on VP Day in 1945, weren't you? So
The ship was after it was damaged. We were towed to Sydney for repair, and the war ended while we were in dock in Sydney being repaired.
And how did you hear it on the radio?
On the radio, and I was transferred to another ship, then to a frigate, and I spent 6 months on the frigate Lachlan.
And I believe to celebrate you and your skeleton crew, the shipmates had a beer. I cracked a beer to celebrate the end of the war.
Well, they cracked a beer for me in the wardroom because I turned 21, and one of the other sub-lieutenants on the ship arranged a bit of a party, and with the few sailors that were left on the ship, plus men from the dockyard, came down and we had a beer, not to celebrate the end of the war, but to celebrate my 21st birthday.
Well,
That was in Pool and Steel's dockyard in Sydney.
that's a pretty good celebration to have. And do you remember what it was like on the streets of Sydney when the word came through, the war was
Oh,
over?
yeah, you could hardly move. They had the big victory parade through the city, and it was just packed with people, all very happy that the war was over.
So what was the first thing you wanted to do when you heard the war was over?
Get home. Get home to Carlton.
And see your mum and dad? And did that happen?
Well, it wasn't very long after that that I got home.
You had some leave,
And then I was on leave from the Colac, and then I had another 6 months on the frigate, the Lachlan, before I was discharged.
And that was in 46, wasn't it, in June? So it was
Yeah,
sometime
that's
later.
right. Yeah, that's right.
All right, Jim. Well, look, we'll leave it there. Is there anything else you might like to say about your time in the service or VP Day?
Well, I really enjoyed it, even though there was a war on. You made very close associations with people because you lived closer there than you did in any other service. And I missed them all for quite a while after it was all over.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing your experience and your stories and your insights today, Jim. I'm extremely grateful to you, and I know there'll be many people listening to you who will be as well. So,
And well done to you, Megan, because I don't think you really needed this interview. You knew everything before you came here.
oh no, not at all. It's not at all. I just needed to know the right questions to ask
Oh,
you.
you're very good.
Out of respect for you. Well, thank you, Jim, so much. It's been a privilege to listen to you today, and especially on this day, 75 years after the victory in the Pacific Day for the Shrine of Remembrance and broader community. And thank you for listening today. I hope you've enjoyed taking part in this commemoration, and you can explore more of the Shrine's online commemorative offerings at shrine.org.au. Thanks again, Jim.